This is Harry Murray and Murray's Fly Shop in Edinburgh, Virginia. We're going to do a podcast now for January. Since the water is so cold and the streams, the weather is so cold, we're going to do one on how to design a better fly. In many cases, you and I both have been fishing to, we'll say, to trout rising and sipping in dry flies. Change flies, use the fly that matches the natural on the water as best we can, and it still doesn't do the job. You know, that's when I start thinking I might be able to tie a better looking artificial fly than the one I'm showing them. And in some cases, I've been successful and so have you. Then the other side of that coin is the same thing can happen on smallmouth bass. Early in the year, a lot of smallmouth feed on the shiners that are along the gravel bars. And as the season progresses, these shiners will move into the grass beds, and they're going to be feeding on shiners. There's no doubt in your mind you can see the shiners fleeing. And you move in as carefully as you can, show them your favorite shiner pattern, put it right in front of them, and no takers. Might even change flies two or three times, other popular shiner patterns, and they just will not take it. All right, that's where we get into what does it take to actually design a better fly than what we have on the end of the line. In order to achieve this, I've got to look back at some of my angling heroes. Ed Shank was certainly a master. Charlie Brooks out west, Vince Marinaro, these guys came up with some outstanding flies. For example, let's go back to that dry fly. You're using the fly that the textbook says matches that one that's hatching out on the stream, and it's not working. So what do you do? What do I do? I catch some of those naturals and look very carefully at the body color to see what it is. I look at it in the light that's available at the time of the day these flies are hatching. Usually, most of our hatches are from mid-afternoon until evening. So I want to pick a body color for the fly I'm going to concoct that'll come fairly close to the color of that natural mayfly. Now, then I really move down close to the stream to try to see how those flies are drifting on the water when the trout are taking them. Do those flies flutter on the water? Are they drifting naturally on the water? Just, you can either get close to them real down on, or you can use binoculars. I've done both. I have a tendency to want to move in fairly close. In fact, one time, some of you have heard the story on this one on the blue quills. We had a blue quill hatch over here in the mountain, and the water had gotten real, real cold. They were on at the right time of the year in the spring, but we'd had a cold spell. The air was real cold. The water had cooled down, and the blue quills were hatching. However, they weren't maturing enough that they could get out of their nymph shuck. So what was happening? The current was pushing these flies over into the back eddies. And the average back eddy would be the size of a living room sofa, maybe the size of an SUV. And these flies were drifting around and around and around back in there. And the trout were feeding heavily on them. Well, from my distance away, I couldn't tell that they were kind of trapped in their nymph shuck. So I got up on a bank, crawled upstream to where I could see what was going on, and sure enough, these blue quills couldn't get out of the nymph shuck, and they were back there drifting around and around. The trout were just going crazy on them. I crawled back down to where I had started, put on a blue quill nymph, size 16, dressed it with dry fly floating, and caught one fish right after another, because that's really what the fish were feeding on. Now, on the streamer thing, back to my shiners here, what I can do, because I'm right here on the stream often, I can go to the stream and seine a number of those shiner minnows to see just what they look like. that's pretty much what I really want to do when I design a new fly. I want one that's going to look like the real shiner minnows. You know, there are many good shiner patterns on the market, but if my existing shiner patterns aren't working, I'm going to try to come up with a better pattern. So I seen a couple, try to see what they look like, try to choose materials that look like that, but extremely important in the materials I select is that I use materials that will let it act like that real shiner minnow in the water. Do they pulsate? Do they swim slowly? All that kind of stuff. So once I kind of make that determination on what my shiners want to act like and look like, what my dry fly wants to look like, how it's going to drift on the water, after I've made those evaluations, the next thing is to evaluate the materials that are on the market. Think of the materials you have in your fly tying kit. Look on the web, see what kind of other materials out there that might be available. And like I ran into on the Mr. Rapidan when I first developed that, I knew I wanted to match the body coloration of the Epispluralis. There was no natural dubbing available at the time, so what I had to do was use a couple of the colors that were available and blend those together. Now, you can get as fancy as you want to blend it, but I used to just blend them with two combs. I'd just put them right there on my tying disc and kind of brush them until I came up with a color that matched that Epispluralis, and that's the color that we now know as the Quill Gordon or the Epispluralis, and those colors are available on the market. Now, Flyrite has one that's real good. So you want to match the naturals as best you can. On the tail of a natural dry fly, I want a tail that's going to be delicate. I want it to be durable. I want it to be non-water absorbent. And again, as best as I can, I want to match that natural instinct. And the same thing on the wing. I want to match the length, the color, the light reflecting qualities, and all that kind of thing as best I can. And then I might do that in several different shades to see what the trout think is going on. And then I just kind of blend these in and maybe come up with a couple different patterns quite similar and see which one works the best. Now, when you're trying nymphs and streamers, you want to, let's say the Epispluralis, the old Quill Gordon. You want to come up with a better pattern than the Quill Gordon pattern on the market. It just isn't producing. Well, what I used to do, and I love to take pictures of them because it's so apparent, just catch a Quill Gordon nymph and put it in the palm of your hand with about 10 drops of water and watch to see how those gill covers pulsate out like crazy. Well, that's the material you want. Hare's ear would be a good example. Some of the synthetic dubbing, you do not want a real plasticky looking fly, because when those Quill Gordon nymphs are in the water, those wing pads are just wiggle, wiggle, wiggle all over the place. For goodness sakes, try to refrain from just coming up with a fly that is simply a pretty fly. These catch fishermen, but they don't usually catch the fish. So the next thing to do after you've come up with your patterns is to test them on the fish. Marinaro had a real good game on this. He called it a game of nods. I think it's in his book, Ring of the Rise, but I'm not sure about that. But anyway, what Vince would do, he'd have a particular need on a particular hatch. He would tie up maybe a half a dozen different dry flies for, we'll say, the blue quill hatch. He was wild on blue quills. The little olive. He just loved that olive hat. Well, what Vince would do would be tie up about a half a dozen different patterns. It's quite similar, but with a slight variation in each. And then he'd go try them on the wild trout. Now, Vince wasn't fishing for stock trout. We're playing the real game here. What he would do, he'd fish pattern number one over rising trout. Trout comes up and looks at it. The second time looks at it. Still hadn't taken it. Third time he comes up and finally won't come up anymore. Vince would give that particular pattern three nods, even though the trout didn't take it. Then Vince would switch, go to another trout or two, switch to a different pattern, and see how many times the trout would come up and look at that. Then, back at the tying bench, he would incorporate the various components in that fly pattern that brought up the greatest number of rises. And in many cases, Vince came up with some really outstanding patterns. And, of course, now when we're talking about backdoor shiners on the bass, we can't see their reaction to them in most cases. So what I do on that, and I come up maybe half a dozen different patterns, quite similar, but I'll then end up relying on the pattern that catches the most fish, and sometimes I'll blend the components on that. So that's a sensible way to come up with revised patterns. So basically, what did I say in all this? All right, first thing you want to do is you discern the need. Why didn't your pattern work? Do the best you can to guess why the fly you were using wasn't working. All right, then you are going to evaluate the existing pattern. For instance, the March Brown dry flies, Denonym Vicarium. There must be 20 different ways to tie a March Brown dry fly. So evaluate the existing patterns. Even fish with them and see what you think. Maybe one of those would be right on. So you're going to try to perceive the need, evaluate existing patterns. Then you're going to try to evaluate the tying materials that are available. Tie your test flies. See what's going to work. Fish these actually in real situations and keep on trying and mixing and matching until you come up with something that's doing the job. This is an excellent approach to revising an improved pattern, and you can talk to many very serious fishermen that have used this type of approach and have come up with wonderful flies. If you have any questions on any of this, just ring me at the fly shop. That's 540-984-4212. This is Harry Murray at Murray's Fly Shop in Edinburgh, Virginia.